Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we're here recording on yet another Sunday.
Yep.
But we don't have much to do aside from record, so that's refreshing.
Yeah, there's severe weather coming tomorrow, so the only other to-do item besides, like, make food is going to be tying the buckets of water that I put in the greenhouse to help regulate the temperature, tying those to the frame. So it's less likely to blow away.
Yeah. And the big greenhouse, which we have yet to complete, is already anchored. So.
Yeah. Oh, did you put the twist ones in?
No.
Or just the ramps are holding it down?
The ramps are holding it down.
Gotcha.
They're like 15 pounds each.
Or 10.
Yeah. Whatever.
And now that it's more sturdy, hopefully, it should hold up to the wind force.
Yeah.
Since there's no panels outside of two small windows.
Yeah. Shout out to the National Weather Service for sending out way advance notice, like starting Friday. I think they're like, there might be storms coming, and it just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Normally we're in like marginal, which there's rumbles, but it's not bad. And this one we're in moderate risk.
It's 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Is what moderate means.
And it's red. You'd think red would be 5 of 5, but pink apparently gets that honor.
Yeah. So. It'll be something tomorrow. Battening down the hatches. We've charged the generators. So
yes, so that your refrigerator will still have power.
Yes.
And freezer, hopefully.
Yes. And we have one big one. So the freezer can hold for like 2 days, I think.
Yeah.
Or it held for 3 days, I think, last summer, until power came back on. And all we lost were things in the door.
Oh, yeah. Because your freezer is packed pretty tight too, so that helps.
Yeah. So hopefully power doesn't go out, because we have two smaller ones so we can run smaller appliances.
Yeah.
Like a television, charging phones, things like that.
Our freezer unfortunately didn't close at one point. A piece of hamburger or a package of hamburger kept it. So there's lots of open space in our freezer. Mm,
that sucks every time it happens.
It's happened twice, and it's just such a huge waste.
I think what you should probably get, you can probably add it on, is that latch that you do. Like, it's a little plastic latch where you close it and then
affix the little peg through the hole.
Exactly. Just as a guarantee, since it has happened twice.
Yeah.
Come to this podcast for more like household tips.
We don't have many, but we share what we can.
Yeah. We're struggling millennials with all the chores that come along with having a house.
Yeah. Two houses, since we're still.
Yeah.
And the big one that I'm sort of want to try, but sort of afraid of to try, is putting hinges on the door that fell off the kitchen cabinet.
Yeah.
Because it's particle board and it's those crappy arm hinges. It's not an actual hinge.
Yeah.
It's so unfortunate and I hate it so much. Like, that kitchen needs to be redone, but that's a lot of money.
Yep.
So, and there's other projects. Like, I would like the stucco to be redone, because mm-hmm. I think that's what the Hornets are in.
Oh.
And like all the new appliances get those vents to the outside, which is great, because you don't want your furnace or whatever to be leaking CO2 into the basement, and like all the cables that come in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be redone.
Yeah, we get mysterious wasps / hornets, whatever they are.
Yeah, I think they're hornets. They're not the fun kind of wasps that like pollinate things or eat cicadas.
Yeah, they're just randomly, and sometimes in the middle of winter, there's just one flying through the living room here, and we have to kill it since I am allergic to bee venom.
To be fair, they don't normally fly. They just sort of crawl, because it's so cold down here in the winter.
Yeah.
But it makes it easy to get rid of,
at
least, or vacuum.
RIP to the hornets.
Yeah. I will say that the pollinator efforts that we do has warmed me to the wide world of wasps.
Mm.
Like, they're the ones that are good are really good and not interested in humans at all.
Yeah.
Or the ones that look really scary eat cicadas.
Mm.
Like, they don't want anything to do with humans.
Yep.
But they are sent to the gods.
All right. So we're starting a new Star Trek series.
We are.
We're starting Star Trek Voyager.
It's a collector's issue for the first time ever, their own comic book series.
So I love Voyager. We covered this in the last Star Trek episode where I ranted about the end of Starfleet Academy.
Yes.
And it's the first series I think I really watched in depth because the original series had reruns sort of on broadcast TV.
Channel 29 at 9 o'clock at night.
Which I would never be allowed to watch.
Followed by TNG at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Again, like my bedtime was like 8:30.
Oh.
Growing up.
We set the VCR to record it. So we had a few tapes that would like constantly run over.
Yeah.
And then I accidentally taped over Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Mary Poppins.
No. So you have to wait for like the annual airings.
Right. Those were on the same VHS, which was great. It had all the fun, like, Blade plug-in commercials.
Oh,
believe me. Believe her. Oh.
Plug it in. Plug it in.
And who was the Brakes people? Rattle, rattle, boom, boom, boom.
Oh.
Midas.
Midas. No, it's Car-X.
No, I mean, it wasn't in the 90s or 80s.
We'll look it up later.
And the M&M's commercials where they're like at M&M boot camp and then they earn their hard candy shell because they're supposed to melt in your mouth, not in your hand.
It's Car-X.
Rattle, rattle, boom, boom, boom with the pigeons?
Yes. Don't worry, call the Car-X man.
Oh.
Yeah. Please don't doubt my pop culture knowledge.
It sounds like
you know me better than that.
It sounds like such a modern name, though.
Yeah, well, I think you're thinking of Carfax.
I am.
Yes.
What other fun commercials? I don't know. They were introduced by the Disney dude, Steve Eisner.
Michael Eisner.
Mike, I got half of it.
Yeah. He was the president of Disney at that time.
Yes.
I have a book that I checked out from the library called Disney War that I need to read all about it, like people not liking his leadership.
Oh.
Like just the corporate fight when he was president.
I mean, was he still there in like the 90s resurgence of like Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Lion King? Huh.
Yeah, he wasn't out until the early 2000s, I think.
Oh, so even Mulan and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those are good movies under his belt, though.
Yes.
All right.
Star Trek Voyager, as I was saying, is the first one I watched pretty consistently because it was on a weeknight when my mom would have to work late, so my grandparents watched me. So we would watch it every week. And I feel the first episode I remember is the Q in the Gray.
Oh.
Like the Q War, Civil War.
Is that when she had the bun? That was early?
I think so. But it might have been a rerun.
Oh.
Because this would have been like 98 that I started watching it. And Voyager started in 95.
It was Channel 9, which was UPN.
Yep.
I feel like it was on Tuesday nights or Thursdays because it wasn't. Wednesdays was religion nights.
It was Thursday.
Yeah. So I remember watching it here in the back room.
My mom worked late Mondays and Thursdays then.
Oh.
So, it was a good lineup. UPN, what a network.
And it had Buffy.
Oh, they did?
Or is that Channel 23?
That was Channel 23.
Oh, that's right.
That was the WB.
Buffy, Angel, Felicity. Mm-hmm. Those are all WB.
That was all like the teen shows.
Yeah.
Which I guess the CW's still sort of teen shows.
Yeah.
But then they switched up. And they're like the superhero network.
Oh, with Arrowverse?
Yeah.
And Smallville?
Yep.
What else was on UPN?
Moesha was UPN.
Oh. Was it like The Pretender and some of those crime shows?
Maybe. I don't remember those.
Hmm. But yeah, Star Trek was something that I was also able to watch.
Yeah. In your sheltered childhood.
Yes. I think they like the idea of the Federation in a Star Trek future.
No.
They being my parents and extended family.
Yes. So let's talk about this series. So this is one of the tent poles of Marvel, Paramount Comics, Star Trek. It was one of the first that started when they got the license.
Oh,
yeah.
Surprising.
So that means it's one of the longest running ones, too.
Oh, because Starfleet Academy is the current front runner. Like, it was longer than DS9 and longer than Presents.
You mean Unlimited?
Yes.
Yep.
That one.
Mm-hmm. And so there's one more. Let me look at the subscription page if there is one.
There's ads for it within the issue where it talks about DS9, Starfleet Academy, and Voyager.
Yeah. And there's one more. It was...
Oh, maybe it is Unlimited.
Is it?
Yeah, there's like a nebula, a pink nebula, oh, yeah. And it's got Star Trek Unlimited, DS9, Voyager, and Starfleet Academy.
Oh, that's right, because they axed Unlimited, and they're like, we're doing other things.
To boldly go where no person has gone before, launching in 96. Those four titles.
So 1996 is also the year like Star Trek First Contact came out.
Oh, that we just watched that.
Yeah, we'll have to read the adaptation and have an episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like a short little episode about it.
Oh, we should invite some of the Star Trek guys to be a part of that.
And also, there's an ad for Star Trek X-Men, which is the TOS one.
Oh, yeah.
With Lob Del and Mark Silvestri.
Yeah, that was something that we read a long time ago, I feel.
Yeah.
And that's... So, I shouldn't reveal anything, so never mind what I was about to say.
We will read both of those. Maybe we'll do like those two Star Trek X-Men together in an episode at some point.
Yeah.
Because they're both giant size. They're like 64 pages each.
Oh, so we can split it up with some of the Star Trek A's that we know.
So this series of Voyager is starting in... Is the writer... let me restart that phrase. I'm not editing this out because we know we do edit this podcast at all. You all just have to deal with it. So this would have been written at the time when the writer only had access to season one, because that cover date is November
96,
which means it the store's in like August. Before season two even began.
That's so weird.
It's a weird magazine dating thing. Like, even if you look at magazines now, they're dated in the future.
I don't think a Northern Gardener one is, but that's also put out by the Horticulture Society.
Yes. Like People Magazine. Maybe not People. It's some weird...
Dear listeners, do you even have magazine subscriptions anymore?
I used to. Remember when we got Magnolia Forever? Oh, I think I still have Birds and Blooms coming.
Oh, I think you do, too.
We have years of that magazine to still read.
There's that. There's Cook's Country. There's Northern Gardener. Although I did rip out the page that talked about the milk jug greenhouses, which sometimes work out.
You know what we should do in the greenhouse this summer is just have a bin with those magazines out there.
Since we don't care if they get moist.
And they shouldn't, like if it's a good bin.
Yeah. But will we actually have access to the greenhouse?
I know. My mom loves using that.
So there's a lot that we can pick up from those things.
Yes. So anyway, dating. This is coming out, and I had to remember that reading this first arc. I'm like, why did they choose this? Oh, they only know a few of the species in the Delta Quadrant right now.
Yeah, and I'll say this again at the end, I'm sure, but I thought the story was pretty good and pretty tight and like true to the characters of the show.
And I picked three because we're trying to do like three issues on average for Star Trek.
And it is a whole arc.
It's a whole arc. I read the first three last Sunday because I said in our last episode, I had like a void and I just wanted to keep reading Star Trek. So I'm like, I'll start Voyager. And I read it that day. And it was a pleasant surprise. I read it. I'm like, oh, this is an arc.
Yeah.
This is great.
Which I guess makes sense for launching a new comic. You want to leave a few cliffhangers at the beginning to make sure that whoever picks up the number one out of curiosity will continue to pick it up.
So this is actually written by a woman. You brought this up and asked, is this typical? And my answer was no, a woman writing comics, not typical in the 90s.
Few and far between it, you said.
Yeah. So we have Laurie S. Sutton writing. And I don't know if she sticks around. We'll find out. We have Jesus Redondo on art. Letters are VC's Chris Iliopoulos.
But it doesn't say VCs.
This one does.
Oh.
It says and virtual calligraphy. So maybe
between issue one and two. Oh. Late 96 is when that came about.
Yeah. John Calise is my colorist in issue two. Okay. Our editor is Bobby Chase, and Bob Harris is still the editor in chief.
Yeah, there's no
they had no
Chip Carter.
Yeah. And I think we saw in DS9 they didn't get a Chip Carter to oversee the liaison, or at least get credited for it.
And Starfleet Academy, like, 2 years
into it.
Yeah. But I will say, Jesus Redondo and John Calise did a great job with the art and the color.
Yeah.
And people's faces, maybe a little bit less so.
Yeah. And
but this splash page with a Talaxian ship in an ion storm, like, you feel like you're actually in an ion storm. Like, there's orange lightning arcing across the ship and between these glowing orbs of sorts, like going in between asteroids. It's neat.
And I would say the faces are more stylized. I'm used to the Gordon Purcell Star Trek. I think that's the
where it's very realistic,
where he looks up reference and he's able to execute that reference really well, whereas this is more stylized, where it's like, it's more comic-y.
Yeah.
It's not trying to imitate, or Star Trek comics currently, a lot of them use photo reference if it's like the original trilogy. And you're like, I know the exact scene they pulled that reference for Leia from, because it's even like the same angle as a frame within a movie, where it's like, that's Carrie Fisher in Star Wars comics. So this one trended more towards comics, which is fine.
Although Jake Bartok does Star Wars art. I don't know if it's like him freelancing and doing really cool stuff, but his stuff is really good. But he must have done something that I was reading for me to follow him on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I do that with a lot of these, where I'll find the people and then I'm like 2 years down the line, I'm like, who is this? And I have to Google and figure out. And I'm like, yeah, they did a Star Trek comic in the 90s. So why don't you kick us off? So there's a storm.
There's an ion storm in an asteroid field.
The title of the issue is The Storm.
It's true. Sort of the Voyager font, a little bit longer, like stems for the letters, like the T's, the R, the one of the H's, but still like giving Voyager vibes. So
hashtag Voyager vibes.
Yeah, big splash page, and we get a whole. The Talaxian's only hope is a starship foreign to this realm of space, a wanderer on a trek for home, a Voyager. But we don't open with that. We open on the holodeck. We get casual clothing.
Yeah, which we didn't often get.
And the stuff, Voyager? The casual clothing.
Clothing. Join the conversation using the hashtag clothing.
Well, Clotho, one of the fates, she did something with weaving or cutting or something.
Sure.
The casual wear isn't that bad. Like, it's bad in the show because it's like 90s.
Not futuristic DS9. Hip. DS9 have like the carpets.
Yeah, but also like Julian Bashir on Ryza with like the vest thing and then those pants. Like,
Voyager didn't often. They were either like in period clothing for whatever holodeck thing they were in.
Yeah.
Or they were in uniforms. And they did variations of uniforms, especially when they did like that racing episode.
Yeah.
The white
racetrack ones with the Delta Flyer.
Yes.
That's a good episode.
It is.
So we get Tuvok in an orange V-neck sweater. That's fun. Janeway's got a windbreaker and Tom Paris has like an open sweater with a white V-neck underneath. Like, it looks fun, actually, as opposed to most of the other holodeck things. It's a park. There's even a dog. Possibly Captain Janeway's own dog, because she says Molly.
That is her Irish setter, I think, from back on Earth that she left with Mark, her fiance, which it won't come up in the book, but spoiler, he moved on.
He did.
And I think Molly hopefully was still around.
And Cass has got these white and pink striped pants, but like the bands of the stripes are horizontal and very broad. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of giving Toby vibes from Labyrinth.
Oh, it is.
So they're here. They're talking about like how great this program is. It took a week to program. And who wants to play baseball? Not the doctor, because he's fishing and has sort of a crabby look on his face, which is fun. So they get Tuvok to step up to bat. Blonde is the pitcher. Off goes the ball because, of course, it's Tuvok, and like he knows all the math to make it hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it splashes the doctor, and he's so crabby. But then there's Kes, and somehow her pants have changed now to black leggings. Also, it does point out that she's 2 years old. So we're going to plant that seed for later. And the doctor starts off really crabby and then warms up when it's Kes that he's actually talking to. Mm-hmm. So, and she's like, fishing doesn't sound fun, especially not for the fish. So that flashback concludes for now.
Mm-hmm.
We're back in the Ion Storm. The captain is trying to get to the Talaxian ship. They can't use transporters because Ion Storm, you're not going to maintain field integrity.
Yeah, you're going to show up all scrambled.
Yeah, which we now know after watching Star Trek the Motion Picture.
I've known for decades because I believe we had a double-decker VCR so you could rent tapes and then copy them.
Oh.
And that was one of the ones, except you couldn't do over 2 hours. So I think I would have to do like parts one and two. And we've seen that with some of my wrestling tapes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's like WrestleMania 9, part one. I think the motion picture was a part one and two, but I'm sure I taped over that after.
It was slow. The music was good, but it was like a good fall asleep to it movie.
Yes.
So they can't even do a tractor beam. And the art on this, like you can see the tractor beam fraying as it moves farther and farther from the ship in a really cool detail. So B'Elanna has a plan. She's going to work on the tractor beam. She's like, it'll take a few minutes. And Janeway's like, you've got two, in that very classic Star Trek captain voice. So for whatever reason, the shields are not up right now. So Voyager braves through the tumult of atomized space, plunging deeper into scorching bedlam. Outside, the ship's shields are battered by a billion particles per second. While inside, the engineering crew fights a taxed inertial dampening system. And they all lurch, as they do in every starship. But something goes wrong. There's fires. The tractor emitter relays have been damaged. And B'Elanna's like, we can fix it, but not before the Talaxian vessel breaks up. So Neelix shows up on the bridge in an emergency.
He really does that so often.
So it's true to the show, I guess, but also why? And he's like, we have to save my people. And he's like, use those miraculous Federation transporters. Also planting a seed.
Mm.
So there's the captain with a zoop, zoop, zoop. Only I think it's an actual static in the communication, not just faking it. And Voyager moves in, the shields go up, and in the art, there's a cool blob, I'm going to say, around the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see sort of the protected shell.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I like this art thing is really cool. We get a full page of Voyager with its shields approaching the Talaxian ship because, new idea, they're going to use the landing struts.
Yeah.
And they don't have a grappler like the NX-01.
Which is fine. We don't need to bring up Enterprise.
But
don't harsh my mellow regarding Voyager.
I will say in the Lower Decks Strange New Worlds crossover episode, which is so good, like it's comfort Trek level good. The La'an, Noonien Singh, and I think it's number one are like, I love grapplers. Like, it's a fun little, like, toss-away moment. So they sort of, like, land like a bug on the Talaxian ship and start to carry it away.
Like, they magnetize it, right?
Do
they reverse a polarity?
They don't reverse a polarity. I think the little grippy feet must have some sort of grippy on them. And then they start to move out.
So to make a 90s reference, it's like one of those little hands that you get in a 25-cent machine that would stick on things.
No, like with the wand.
Where it's like, and you'd like grab a piece of paper from in front of someone.
That was
or it'd get full of like hair.
Oh, yeah. Buzz. Full of lint immediately.
Yeah.
Like that sticky.
That's my headcanon for what Voyager has on its landing struts is just a million of those little sticky hands.
Yeah. And they're Like, I don't like the Intrepid class. I'm just going to put it out there.
Right.
The spade shape,
mm-hmm.
like, it's sort of sleek, but it's, I mean, not as bad as a galaxy, but it's still not aesthetically pleasing for me. But the angles that they get, like, with the bug moving towards the Talaxian ship looks really good. And the spade shape, like, there are certain angles that make it look good, and this is one of them. And you're like, that artist did a great job with it.
Yeah.
There's even a huge
double-page spread.
Yeah.
Splash, double-page spread.
With the ion lightning, with the Talaxian ship underneath Voyager as they try to move out of the storm. But the Talaxian ship is shifting the mass erratically. Tom Paris can't maintain control. We'll be pulverized if we don't get out of here. Also, because of the ion storm, the shields are not strong enough to extend around the Talaxian ship like they had originally wanted. So they do what they can, which means it's a cliffhanger right into issue two.
Okay. So they try to beam the Talaxians on board now. So
yes,
within the bubble.
There are where the bubble would be, like, they're within proximity. So the materialization has a higher chance of success.
Yeah. Except it's not going well. They're losing the pattern.
As you do.
Yep. Up on the bridge, they're getting shaken.
Wobble, wobble.
Yep.
Topple, topple.
And the Talaxians go back to their ship. They didn't have enough to pull them back.
Oh, it was a failed transport attempt.
It was. Then they let the Talaxian ship go.
Yeah, right.
Yep. They're like, we can't hang on to it any longer.
We're the Talaxians didn't go back to the ship. The transport failed because they went into a quantum fissure. That's why it's not so big a deal when the Talaxian ship blows up.
They're like, they're somewhere else. We'll find them.
Yeah. And there was a moment where it's like, we're stuck to this other ship. It's about to be blown apart.
Yeah.
Are we also going to be blown apart? But then finally, the final landing strut releases.
Yep. Janeway tells B'Elanna to meet up. We need to find these Talaxians wherever they went. And they start looking for them within the transporter room.
And is it here that they're also like, this seems fishy. Let's do some long range scanning.
Yeah. I will say there's one criticism I have throughout the first few issues. There are asterisks next to.
Next to. The
like abbreviations.
Yeah.
And there's
not a glossary.
No glossary, no footnotes.
So, I looked for a glossary in the back pages.
Editorial Bobby Chase did not catch that because B'Elanna's like, if that energy disrupted quantum resolution of the ACB asterisk, it means annular confinement beam. But
Maybe they did have it and they had to sacrifice it for ads for Play Dirty, Three Dirty Dwarves, or Break Time with a Kit Kat, or the 2-page Sonic 3D Blast.
It's cut off. Look, it's half of a text box.
Is that text or
text? It says ACB equals annular confinement beam, but it's cut off horizontally.
What?
Yeah, it so
how does that even happen? It's not like the comics pages where we got from Gordon Purcell with the text bubbles that are taped on or glued on.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay, so the senior staff is convened, and by senior staff I mean also 2-year-old Kess and Neelix, the cook.
Morale officer.
Always
/ ambassador / guide. Officer.
It's so bizarre that these two were always in the ready room. It's like okay.
And that Ensign Kim counted as senior staff, even though he's an ensign. And wasn't this his first mission, too?
Maybe.
I'm trying to remember the pilot for Voyager, where it's him in Paris in Quark's bar in DS9.
So the idea is that they are going to send two people to go search for the Talaxians.
And Neelix and Chakotay volunteer.
And they go down to this.
It's a interdimensional planet. It was an asteroid field in normal space,
but it's a planet
through the quantum fissure.
And it's full of static electricity. They shock themselves with every step.
I get what that feels like, where you can sense things close to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever get the sense when COVID was happening and people were like, use these electronic air filter things that'll tear apart viruses? But all it did was make the whole room smell like static.
Oh.
Like, it has a particular slightly ozone-y smell.
Yeah.
And you can tell what it is. And I got that from those pages.
Nice. So they're scanning, and then they see some static beings move towards them. And it seems like they're chasing them towards a crystal castle.
Yeah. And then I thought that would have been strange. If you were being chased towards a structure on an unknown planet, wouldn't that mean that the life forms endemic to that would have built it, and then you're moving towards their stronghold? Like, yes, please put me in your dungeon.
Yeah. So they try to resist. They get shocked even more. Neelix fires a phaser beam.
And it's just absorbed. Like, you don't fire energy at energy beings.
Yeah. So then it really chases them in and then doesn't go any further than the doorway.
Yeah.
And then they find the Talaxians and they're like, wow, you're here too. And they're like, yeah, we were chased in.
Yeah. They followed an ion trail from the Talaxians. Like, mm-hmm. It was weak enough to track, but not strong enough to send a transporter beam through.
Yep.
Once they fixed the transporters from the initial oopsie daisy, we got sent through a quantum fissure.
Yeah. Back on Voyager, they're waiting for a signal from Chakotay and Neelix.
Yep.
And in the meantime, this is where Janeway's like, something's fishy.
Right. Like, you have two navigational hazards on top of each other, and you're like, oops, I just sailed my ship in between both of these things.
Yeah.
Womp womp. And come help me.
Janeway is like, Kim, look for something and I'll help you. And Eric Kim's like, what? And she's like, when you find it,
I'll know what it is. Like, I hate that phrase so much, especially with directions, when someone's like, you'll know it when you see it. No, yeah. I will not. That's the reason you're here, is to guide. Like, either give directions, give landmarks, not, oh, you'll know it when you see it, because I don't know.
Yeah. So the Talaxians are like, please, Chakotay and Neelix, take us away.
Save us from this place.
And Chakotay tries to raise Voyager. He's like, this crystal palace,
it's a dampening field.
Yep. So we have to go outside to get a signal through.
They try to get out, and then the energy beings chase them back in again right away.
Yep. So then Chakotay steps outside and he's like, wait a minute, I can talk to them.
Yeah. And he couldn't before? ?
Yeah. So he figures out a rudimentary way to signal basic things to them.
Yeah, using his tricorder.
And the beings are like, okay, we're down with that.
We're friends, we pushed you into the Crystal Palace to save you from all the static of our environment.
Yes. So Chakotay is able to signal Voyager. They all get beamed back on board, but then betrayal.
I mean, they get beamed back, but not before he has one of those touching, like, I put my hand out in a gesture of friendship to you. And the first, I get why, like, it's a cool moment to be like, first contact, it was successful. We found friends.
Yep.
Or turned enemies into friends. But the, like, it's a static creature.
Yeah.
It's an energy form. It doesn't necessarily know what a arm is or why you're lifting it up.
Yeah. So the Talaxians pull their disruptors on the crew once they're on Voyager.
Rude.
Yeah. And apparently there was a Trabe vessel hiding nearby.
Trabe is a species that had dominated the Kazon, and then the Kazon rebelled.
And we probably saw them like in one episode of season one.
Yes. It was that episode where they're like, Voyager, be diplomats for us and reunite us and create a peace treaty, because the Kazon are shooting us up, we're shooting them up, like, it's terrible. And both species turn out to be after Voyager.
Yep.
Like, it's a whole diplomatic snafu.
So the Talaxians are actually spies. They're agents of the Trabe, and they're working in concert to then turn Voyager over.
Yeah.
So the next issue is repercussions.
It is. And this time there's Sergio Melia as inker with all the same creative team as before. So it's a standoff in the transporter room. "These Talaxians are agents of the Trabe," says Blana from the console with Kes. There's some security officers, but Chakotay is on the pad along with Neelix, and they're being menaced and pointed at with phasers. So they're like, "Now we have a hostage. Let us go." And Blana's like, "You need to take me with you." And Chakotay's like, "What? What are you doing?" But the Talaxians are like, "Okay, we're going to trap your chief of security in a transporter room." And as soon as they did that, I was just like, no.
Not smart.
Not smart. Like, they know that this technology is great and wonderful and they want it.
You need to pull in Uhura and say, "Get in the closet."
Yes. But there's no... So I will say, maybe it works for the Talaxians because they're only hired hands. They don't know all the details. Mm-hmm. And the Trey was like, "Federation technology, we want it because it's great and fantastic," not necessarily knowing what it does fully, or they wouldn't have given those details to the Talaxians.
Right.
So plot wise, it seems suspect, but it makes sense the more you think about it. So off they go to engineering. Tom Paris, though, in the transporter room says unhelpful things like, "We're trapped." And Tuvok's like, "No.
Tom Paris.
You should know better.
You know better."
So Tuvok communicates to Captain Janeway, who locks out the Talaxians and all the sensitive systems. So Blana is with them, with the Talaxians, trying to break into engineering, and she's taking too long. The head mercenary shoots Chakotay, who goes down. It's like, oh, the next shot's going to be full power.
Yeah. And by the way, Chakotay is a hunk in the series, like in Voyager.
Oh, yes.
But then Robert Beltran, who portrayed Chakotay, Trumper.
Yeah.
Really unfortunate.
And it's a double strike because the whole, "Oh, I'm a consultant for indigenous cultures," did not actually know anything about indigenous cultures.
Not him, but the consultant on Voyager. Like, yes. They employed someone, a third party, who totally lied.
Yes.
So every Native American thing is bullshit in Voyager.
It's trope on a trope.
Yep.
Which it's is like, real sad.
Yeah. Like, trope in the way that Shaman was a trope in the Burn Run.
Yes. So Blana opens the door and the Talaxians walk into a room full of armed security people, including Tuvok. "Your celebration is premature," to Captain Acrux, which it's true. Mm-hmm. And that's, I feel like, as snarky as a Vulcan will get.
Yes.
And the Talaxian captain's like, "How did you get in here? I left you trapped." And thank you, Tuvok, for saying it would not be tactically sound to reveal my methods to even a vanquished opponent. He's not falling for the evil monologue trick.
No.
Tuvok knows better. So they get Chakotay up to sickbay, and then the doctor's was offline. Kes is like, "I got this. Okay, finally, I will activate the doctor." And he collapses, which is weird. He's a hologram. He's a computer program.
Yep.
He should not be collapsing. But there he goes. Then he wakes up. Then he just disappears in that hologram. Is the onomatopoeia. So, "Captain, this is crazy. The doctor just disappeared. Not deactivated, just gone." And then Kim on the holodeck, I don't know why he's there in the middle of a emergency. Oh, because they were investigating the odd energy spikes across the ship. And the doctor is here and the programs are running crazy. And it's like a weird mashup of different hologram programs. So he's a Viking, but then it's also the Victorian
house
where Captain Janeway is the governess.
Yeah, which why would she, that program specifically, not Fairhaven from the later seasons.
We like Fairhaven with the delete the wife iconic
but
statement.
Like, her method of relaxing was being the governess to some real mouthy rich kids.
Like, you don't have to be the captain all the time.
Yeah.
And what is a governess outside of the captain of small children?
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing. The doctor is Beowulf and keeps speaking in that language, and Janeway figures out how to talk to him. The queen likes well these words, your battle boast. And the doctor says, then resume as erst, the warriors wassail and words of power, the proud bands revel. Like, okay, I'll stop fighting. I'll just drink with you.
Yeah.
Is basically what that said. So they start talking. Things get weird. Like, systems across the whole ship are malfunctioning, which is not what you want when you're just got out of an ion storm.
And there's
people you need to stay in the brig. And then over the comms, after a wham, the force fields in the bridge have deactivated, and there is a Trabe vessel opening fire.
Oh.
So
there they are.
There they are in those ugly ass ships.
Yeah.
So not a match for Voyager if Voyager was 100%. But after the ion storm, all the lightning strikes, all the weird power spikes across the ship, Voyager is hobbled. So that's why the Trabe was like, I'm going to fire. You're going to surrender to us. We're going to take all your cool Federation technology.
It's not going to happen. We're in season one, okay?
It's true. There's so much more. I do appreciate that after all the whams and skizzes and whomping different places, Captain Janeway's hair, that bun, is coming undone. Even Ensign Kim's, like, shellacked hair is coming undone. Like, that's fun. That's a nice little detail.
Yeah.
So the Talaxians escape. Tom Paris fakes being sick in front of them, like, oldest trick in the book.
It is.
I guess that's the advantage of being in a quadrant where no one knows you.
Yeah, they don't know what might be messed up.
So they, yeah, and these cultures may not have the oldest tricks in the book that people fall for. So they get control again. There's a whole struggle, and the captain, the Talaxian captain, I should say, gets phasered. And they remember that they have a wide beam stun setting on their phasers,
which I feel is not utilized as much as it could be.
Especially that DS9 battle with all the Jem'Hadar. Like, they're all coming from the same direction, just wide beam.
Yeah.
So there's a security person who gets a name, Lieutenant Rand.
Which, pulling from Janice Rand.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't remember there being a Rand on the show.
No.
But you see crew members and they get a name in one episode and then they're never seen again.
They do employ some of the same background actors in the first couple seasons for consistency.
There's like two or three engineers.
There's the Vulcan.
Selleck?
Something like that.
Tom Selleck. Oh, no. Who never has to go through Ponfar, apparently. So good for him.
What? No, he went through it.
Oh, he did. He had the hots for B'Elanna.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
That was a very aggressive episode.
Yeah.
But, like, there were some of those in Brad Dourif as Suter.
Yeah. Well, for an arc.
Yeah, for an arc. But Lieutenant Carey, who was in the first couple seasons, Hunk.
Yeah.
Also, like, one of the only Voyager action figures I had back in the day because they were so hard to find.
Oh.
Like, my chief engineer, because I didn't have anyone but old Scotty from TNG.
Oh.
he was my main engineer.
Oh, that's fun.
Then they brought him back in season 7 and killed him. They're like,
that was a different engineer.
No, they brought back Lieutenant Carey in season 7,
but
he died.
The pictures that Josh showed of the one who they brought back for that season and killed right before Voyager got home was not the hunky one that I remember.
Oh,
there's a different hunky one.
Yeah, but Lieutenant Carey is my hunk.
Oh, so okay.
It for sure they killed that character like in the penultimate episode.
Sad.
Yeah. I should write some Joe Carey fanfic.
Oh, it's going to be slasher fic.
Yeah, not slasher fic. We've had this discussion.
Ugh.
That's horror. Slash fic is fucking.
Yeah. Whatever. It's close enough.
No.
Anyway, so malaprops aside, they are examining the doctor in sickbay. And they're like, we need to treat this as if it's some sort of disease. So they activate the doctor, like B'Elanna shakes him awake. And they're like, diagnose yourself, doctor. He's like, confusion, hallucinations, disordered behavior, clearly a case of delirium. And Chakotay is like, can the ship have an organic breakdown? And B'Elanna's like, it can, bioneural gel packs that run throughout the ship. And the doctor's like, I second that opinion. The gel packs are an organic component of Voyager, and many of my subroutines are controlled by them. It's likely radiation poisoning. Here's the treatment. Go forth and do it. So engineering can't, for whatever reason. And B'Elanna's like, hey, doctor, be helpful. Because communications are down.
Oh.
That's why. And he has gone from being able to diagnose himself to just playing with bricks.
Yes.
So it's up to them, the folks in sick bay, you know, the two-year-old Okampan. And meanwhile, the trade was like, I demand your surrender. Otherwise, we'll kill all your engineers, because now the Talaxians are free again and they are back at engineering. Oh, that's why they couldn't get a hold of him. And I appreciate Janeway's smirk and the I don't like threats, Negrom. You may fire at will, Mr. Tuvok. And the Trave didn't realize that they fixed the ship. And I like that it harkens back to the iconic line that I can't remember, so I'm going to butcher it anyway. Okay. The I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
Yes.
And yeah, then
that's accurate.
Doesn't she follow up with like fire photons or something?
Probably.
You know, she's the unlimited badass supply of photons that they have.
Yes.
So, yeah. They recap the super inappropriate to give their technology to the Trabe or the Kazon. They absolutely will not let that happen. It would only make their situation worse. And they escort the Talaxians back to the brig. And the doctor is fixed. And he even makes a joke, forsooth, in cheer and revel. Don't look at me like that. I'm joking. Har har. And that's the arc.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty fun.
It was. And I feel silly for messing up some of the details for the podcast, even though it made sense and I recognized them while I was reading it.
What do you mean?
Like the engineering
gaffe
that I just did.
No, it's fine. It's comics.
It is comics. And at least it's a sign of their quality that I read through. I'm like, oh, this is great. I need the next one.
Right?
I need the next one.
Yeah, I had to restrain myself because if I read them all now, I'm just going to have to read them all again. I guess isn't the worst thing.
No, not when we have a podcast about it.
Yeah.
But Clyde was a good reading partner.
Oh, good.
Clyde the Foster Bun.
Yep.
He came along with us as our demonstration bunny. We went to a how to trim your rabbit's nails clinic.
Which was super helpful.
Super helpful. He's so big, though.
Yes,
so
full of fluff, because Angoras have a ton of fur. He's getting a shave down next weekend because he'll be too warm.
I worry that he will overheat.
Yeah.
But he was very chill about the whole situation.
Yep.
His nails did not need to be done.
No, we trimmed a few.
Because if you trim it, then the quick will recede a little bit.
Yeah.
So you can start to have shorter nails, which might be good for him.
I think it will be.
That way we don't have to worry about it snagging on the shag carpet. And he's so big and clunky, I'll say.
Yeah.
That when he hops into the litter box, sometimes his feet don't make it. So anything to help him move around.
Yeah. So Voyager, I have no idea what the next arc is. They planted a couple seeds where things could go, I feel. Like you have the Trabe in play, sort of, in the background.
Yeah. So like that was good writing by Laurie S. Sutton. So props.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I'm looking forward to a bunch of issues. There's one, of course, for Telepathy War somewhere there. But
somehow. But
otherwise, it goes on a while.
Recommend for Star Trek fans. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we recommend all of these.
Yeah.
That we've read so far. There hasn't been anything that's like, oh, this issue was a dud.
Yeah. And I think they chose the right writers, the correct writers for everything,
and artists.
Oh, there was something from a letters page. I don't know if I will bring it up now. Maybe I will. It's from letters page from Starfleet Academy, where someone was really mad that the telepathy war came out of order. Like, the editorial staff and creative staff, like, apparently just fucked up that crossover.
Oh, no.
Where it was like parts one and two, and then four and five, and then three came out. Like, they didn't, everything didn't line up correctly.
That's too bad. Yeah. I imagine it's a lot of things to keep in mind.
So many creative teams.
Like, yeah.
And we saw, I think, DS9 in those letters pages where they fell behind, where they're like, oh shit, guess there's no issue this month.
Yeah.
So it's obvious if you look at this from the longer range perspective of Marvel, where they were going through bankruptcy, they had less staff because they kept firing people in different rounds of layoffs. And they just, I don't think they had the capacity to execute this as they would have 5 years prior or 5 years in the future.
Oh.
It was just, they got this license in the midst of the business collapsing, and they did the best they could.
I could see them being like, this is going to be a lifeline. This is a new fandom that we can draw in.
Right.
We can get those coins.
Yep.
But the
Star Trek was red hot in 96.
TNG had just ended.
You
DS9 and Voyager were up and running.
First Contact was coming out in theaters.
And I feel like those
movies
did well.
They did. First Contact was huge. Like, Generations, I remember a little bit, like, seeing commercials maybe, but I was fully invested in Star Trek by the time First Contact came out. And that summer, I swear, you could not turn around in, like, a Kmart or flipping through channels or anything without seeing a commercial for it or a licensed product for it.
Yeah.
So it was big.
So it makes sense. Like, let's maximize this new fandom, get enough coins to get us out of bankruptcy issues.
Yep.
But then just biting off too much, like, those scales became imbalanced too fast.
And I think they invested a lot of creative talent into it. When we saw it launched with four titles, in comparison, they did the Heroes Reborn thing, where they, like, killed off, in quotes, or, like, shuffled a bunch of titles off.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just had a few core titles left in the mainstream, one of which was Quicksilver, like, 98. But they really slimmed down the selections. This is where they're canceling tons of things in main Marvel because they're like, it's not making enough. I mean, less than 2 years prior to these issues coming out, Alpha Flight was canceled.
Oh.
And that was 130 issues deep.
Yeah.
So it was a gamble, them trying to get things started. And then they just kept adding Star Trek series.
Yeah. When you think, oh, this will save us, you put all your resources to it, and then it's not enough.
And then you're not executing it according to the expectations of the fans, and probably not Paramount.
And I can see, like, the amount of detail on those big pages for all the ships. Like, and you need all that detail to bring in the fans into a new medium.
Yeah.
So, and we've talked about that a little bit, like, with Wheel of Time, like, new mediums. Like, you can't expect things to translate perfectly from one to the other. So you take what you can. And the detail on the ships and the space vistas, all that, that require so much shading, so much detail.
Yeah.
Like
the amount of ink, like, fuck, just pour out a bottle of ink and then get some whiteout for the stars afterwards.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking forward to reading further. It's obvious that Loria Sutton has a good grasp of characters.
Yeah.
And also
planting seeds for later payoffs.
Yeah. And back then, probably had the reference material from Paramount, where it's probably just all the VHS tapes of all the episodes. And she watched them in order to write the characters so well. Like,
she must have
watched the first season probably multiple times because the characters are acting like they should. And we've seen how they haven't in some issues.
Right.
Where it's like that, like you're applying like a general Ferengi patois to how like Quark is acting, but it's also
not
one dimensional Quark.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Let us know what you liked about Star Trek Voyager, everyone.
Yeah. And how you feel about the franchise moving into comics.
Yeah. And we will catch you next time for the next clutch of Voyager issues.
Okay, bye. Be well.